and welcome to my hearth. In the last episode, we started to explore the power of Christmas in storytelling, and we don't have to look very far to find examples of it. There are many films and plays and books which are based around Christmas time. And in this last episode, we tried to see why it was such a useful storytelling device. I said I would start to look at my experiences of Christmas to give examples of what I've been talking about. The first element is always, where are you going to spend Christmas? And that again forms the basis of the journey towards that place. Now, when my mother's father and mother were still alive, my maternal grandparents, we always spent Christmas with them. For the majority of times, we went to wherever they were living, and at times they came to us. Now, that's significant in terms of journeying, because especially when I was little, we were in Essex and they were in Cumberland. And that involved a journey in a car from where we were to them. And I am old enough that when that was happening when I was little, there was no M6 motorway. And so we went up on the A1. And that meant journeying through the centre of many small English towns at Christmas time and going right up as far as Scotch Corner and then travelling across on the A66 to Cumberland. The car was completely packed with presents and food and all sorts of things that we needed for the journey. Now, fortunately, my father was always given a car by his firm, because as I've already said, his job involved him going to very strange places to do assessments for insurance, all kinds of things, and sometimes to places which were very inaccessible by public transport. And so he was given a car. They changed it relatively frequently, and so we always had a vehicle that wasn't going to let us down. Moreover, as I have already told you, my father spent the majority of the war driving, so he was an extremely good driver. The only thing that was unusual, which I didn't realise till I started driving myself, was that he drove our cars as though they were an armoured car, and as though they didn't have synchromesh gears. So he did a thing called double declutching, which he delighted in telling me about whenever we were driving along, although of course I didn't understand it. Anyway, that part of the journey, the actual driving, was always very much in his control, and he was really, really clever and meticulous in the way that he prepared the car and prepared us for the journey. Now, as we were heading several hundred miles north, we were also prepared for the fact that the weather was going to be significantly colder wherever we went. And so there were things like blankets in the car and thermos flasks in case we were holed up somewhere. However, because he had prepared as though it was going to be the end of the world, we never really got into any serious trouble. We always went as soon as we could, which meant that we went before Christmas. In the days of my youth, for some reason, there was always a little gap before Christmas came along after we broke up for the school holidays. The half-term holiday in the autumn term, which we called Blackberry Week, for obvious reasons, because that's when everyone went out to pick their blackberries, was always the last week in October. And after that, we went right through until the Christmas holiday. My mum was the most extraordinarily good cook. People tell me that I'm a very good cook, but I've only learnt from my mum and my grandma how to do things. And as I said to you before, we had a stove that my mum cooked on, and it did make the most fantastic cakes. So part of what was in our car luggage was all the produce that my mum had produced in preparation for Christmas. And I'm talking several Christmas puddings, a Christmas cake, mince tarts, sausage rolls, everything you could possibly want, as well as other cakes just in case. There was always a Dundee cake, there were fairy cakes, there were all sorts of things. This wasn't unusual, because my mum's cake tins, at all times of the year, were always full. My father had a sweet tooth, although he didn't really like sweets. However, he satisfied his craving by raiding my mum's dried fruit drawer. The cry of, "Charles, you've been at the currants again," always used to make me laugh. My mum never ran out of ingredients because my father kept her incredibly well stocked up, because he did the bulk shopping every week with the car. And he used to go to Sainsbury's. He was very well known there by the people who ran the store, particular store that he went to. And he was known as Mr. Carrier Bag, because he always arrived with a shipping order of carrier bags. When I was at boarding school, I went with him once on one of his shopping expeditions, and I was amazed because I thought, is this man shopping for a family of 50? And I didn't really understand until later that because they'd lived through the privations of rationing, they were obsessed with not running out of anything. And also, when I was staying with my grandma, which was frequently, I realised that you always had to have something in the cupboard in case somebody popped in for a meal. And as that happened at least 3 or 4 times a day, you had to be well prepared. So eventually we arrived with a car full of stuff in preparation for Christmas and unloaded it all into my grandma's house. In those days, Christmas decorations happened quite late. So in fact, when we arrived, part of that was that we did the decorations. Now that was a huge advantage, because that meant my sister could help in it. I wouldn't say that she was OCD when we did Christmas decorations, but I remember once being at her house for Christmas and she redid the Christmas tree 4 times because she wasn't quite happy with it. She was a genius when it came to Christmas decorations, because she could arrange flowers and she could make anything look very beautiful. When we were in Portinscale, which is a village outside of Keswick, in a beautiful, beautiful house, there were pine trees around, and my sister would collect the pine cones and paint them with gold and silver paint. One day she found a particularly large pine cone, and I thought that was unusual, because I thought all the cones would be the same size from a similar tree. But she brought it back and she painted it beautifully. I mean, it really did look like an expensive shop-bought decoration from Liberty's. However, it transpired that it had fallen out of the bedroom window of one of our neighbours, and the young lady to whom it belonged was actually delighted when she got it back from my sister, as I say, because it was so immaculately decorated. It did feel very Christmassy in those days, because we did have much colder snaps in the winter. There was always snow on the top of the fells, But the other thing that was interesting was that we got frosts which made the land look like we'd had a dusting of snow. I think it's probably a memory of childhood, as they call it, where things are amplified and you don't always remember it. But for the majority of times, it was cold rather than wet. So it's lovely to be huddled up in your warmest clothing, me, as I've already said, in my Eskimo outfit, and all the people with their scarves and hats. Once the decorations were begun, one of the main things that we had to do was display the Christmas cards which had arrived, because after all, the person that sent them at some point over Christmas might very likely appear. You put up strings all over the place, and then the folded card was slotted over the string so that you could see it and read it. I know we had an enormous family, but from my memory, we used to get about 150 cards. That meant that they were literally hanging everywhere. In the modern era of health and safety, they were probably a fire hazard, depending where we were living. At one point, we were in a cottage that had been built in the early Middle Ages, and it had walls that were so thick that you couldn't do anything with them. Window seats that had cushions on them that were as big as settees. Now, that particular house only had gas lighting in it, not electric. And the gas pipes went to a gas mantle, which was like a little cover that went over it, and it was that that you lit. And at regular intervals, a mantle would actually burst into flame with a pop. I used to get hysterical about it because I thought the world was going to end in fire and flames. But it never did. Just like Meghan Markle, recollections may differ, but I've been trying to rack my brain as to when we went to midnight mass, and I've a funny feeling that when my father was alive, we didn't do it. I believe that it was one of the things that we watched on the television, but I think that was later. We did, however, watch the service of Nine Lessons and Carols from King's College, which was always broadcast on the television, and that was a highlight of the Christmas season. For many years I sang in those services when I was older and sang in a cathedral choir, but again, I don't think my father ever came to them. So the decorations are done. As much as the food as possible had been prepared in advance, apart from the actual Christmas meal. And we'll talk about Christmas dinner in the next episode.